Broadcasting from beneath a pile of E3 press releases, this is Eat Gamer 11, recorded June 4th for 2011. My name's Jeff Wyckoff, and I'd like to offer you an outsider's perspective of the video game industry. This episode is all about gamers, you and me. That is, really in the context of a player base, the group of players playing any group of video games, either by genre or by title, sometimes by individual publisher. However we're spoken of as a group, if we're actively purchasing and playing these games, we are the player base. Now obviously we make up the financial backbone of the industry. If we aren't buying the games that the publishers are selling, then the developers won't be asked to make any more. If there's too few of us, that means a game fails. But luckily, that also means that if there's a whole lot of us, the game will likely see something in the future. Whether it be sequels, updates, downloadable content, even just more content from that individual publisher. But what if there's not just a lot of us, but a lot of us? I mean, astronomical numbers. It's easy to go into a classic example like WoW. Well, there's 11.5 million players at this point. They're making a lot of money every month because we're subscribers. Even if you haven't subscribed monthly, you're subscribed by, you know, every 6 months or every year. Very few of you out there actually have those 25-year cards. The problem with a player base that's 11.5 million large and spans over multiple countries, multiple language barriers, multiple cultures of gamers, is that every new bug, every new flaw, every way that your game can be exploited, the impact is magnified enormously. See, if Blizzard goes out, patches their game with some content, fails to go through its QA process, its testing process, and doesn't catch something, as they've been known to do from time to time, that error may affect a very small portion by percentage of their player base, but when you apply that percentage to such a large number, like 11.5 million, you're talking about players affected in the hundreds of thousands. And suddenly the ramifications of a bug, of a flaw like that, are much more serious than if your game was in the more typical MMO arena, something like Rift, where maybe your player base is 500,000. And the similar bug affecting a similar percentage of your players really only means you're hitting, you know, four digits. It's still a lot of players, but it means that you have a lot larger of a room for error, because the financial impact, if there's a financial impact, isn't going to be as great. Sure, your inbound resources aren't as bad, but what looks worse? A company like Treon Worlds losing $50 in subscribers every month due to a bug, or due to a similar bug with similar span, Blizzard losing several hundred thousand dollars every month. The difference is that over at Treon, things aren't likely to change a whole lot. The company will still go ahead, try and correct the bug, because that's what good companies do. But it's very unlikely that there's going to be heads rolling over something like this, where over at Blizzard, someone who's managing the books and substantiates something like this, someone's going to have to answer, because that's a lot of money, even if they're making a whole lot more from the rest of the players. The other problem with a really large player community like what WoW has is that it just costs more to maintain. Really, for the same reason that I just said, you know, you can't afford mistakes. You've got more developers just so that you can pour through content in a timely fashion, but you also have to have more testers. Heck, you've even got to have more community managers, more CMs, because, well, you've got a larger player base to manage, and you've got more sites that you have to manage, and you have more press that you have to manage. The point is, it's all a whole lot more expensive to maintain. And mistakes can be very, very costly. There's also a little bit of an interesting issue on the community side. A game like World of Warcraft with that many players, and a game that appeals to so many different kinds of players, is going to attract, it's going to attract 11.5 million people worth of variety. That's a community that's going to be very difficult to manage in an elegant fashion. You think that you have people who are going to be competitive, interested in PvP rankings and the like. You're going to have people who are very focused on just enjoying themselves with a small group of friends. Then you're going to have the mega guilds, guilds of several thousand players running multiple raids every day. Then you're going to have that group in between, you know, the group of close-knit people who are going to be raiding 1-2 times a week, probably makes up the majority of the population. The fact is that that majority of the population isn't always the vocal one. And they're not always the part of the population that you have to manage. You think about the personalities that you normally associate with competitive player versus player gameplay, and I hesitate to go out of my way and stereotype them, but they tend to be more brash, and that's because they're willing to have that conflict. They actually yearn for it in a competitive sense. But they're more willing to rise to conflict and state their opinion. And you have to be very elegant how you manage them, because left unchecked, they can have a negative impact on the rest of your community, your more casual community. But if they're ignored, well, that looks bad on you as well. Because what happens when the casual community decides that they want a say? If all you've done is ignore people up until that point, even if it was another portion of the community, you're unlikely to get the same kind of feedback from those other players. In contrast, look at a game like Counter-Strike Source. This isn't a subscription game. It's a game that you purchased once and you play online forever. It's still an online offering. It's massive in the number of players playing it, but not in the model of how you play. Of course, you're only going to be playing matches with maybe 20 people in them total. If you're playing competitively, you're probably only playing matches with 5 people. It's not a subscriber model. But this means that their product is simpler. It also means that it's cleaner. And that means that when it comes to providing updates and providing content to the player base, they can be a little bit more targeted. It also means that their goal in maintaining us as a player base is a little bit different. You see, with World of Warcraft, the goal is to maintain us as subscribers, to keep us playing that one game. There is the other goal of maintaining the reputation of Blizzard, hoping that we'll go out and purchase their other games, but look how often they put a new game out. It's really not too big of a deal. When it comes to Counter-Strike, though, one of the big things they're doing in maintaining their community at a cost to them is maintaining their reputation. Because Counter-Strike has a huge following of players, and they want to make sure that when they put the next Counter-Strike game out, the next first-person shooter, or anything coming out of Valve and the teams that worked on Counter-Strike Source, they want to make sure that you had a positive taste in your mouth. They want to make sure that the entire player base looks upon them as favorably as possible and are as likely as possible to think, you know, I'm going to buy this game because I had a lot of fun playing Counter-Strike and I know that the people running it are going to continue to run it and they're going to maintain that game. It's all about maintaining that reputation when it comes to a game like Counter-Strike Source. It's all about building a positive relationship with us. Of course, because of the community, and because there isn't that steady inbound revenue stream that a massively multiplayer game or any subscription game has, Counter-Strike's community is a little bit of a toxic environment. People can be a little bit unruly, and it's really hard to manage when you can't substantiate hiring, you know, an entire team of full-time community managers to look after them. But because it's a game that's not always evolving, where changes come and usually very over a very lengthy period of time, and they tend not to be absolutely earth-shattering, at least not to the casual observer, they may be more of an impact if you're playing the game competitively. But there's a little bit less to be worried about as a player, and a little bit less to be worried about as a developer. Because chances are you've had ample time to go ahead and test the product, and the product was stable to begin with. There's the same range of technical issues that you may be up against, but a group that isn't constantly paying for the right to play their game is going to be a little bit more forgiving. Take this in another direction. Take a look at the old LucasArts adventure games. You know, Monkey Island, Full Throttle. Those are games that, when they were developed, most of us who played them might have been pretty young. I'm sure there's some guys out there, I'm sure there's a lot of guys out there who were, you know, full adolescent adulthood, that is to say, middle of their 20s, playing Monkey Island, Monkey Island 2, and everything else that that fantastic studio had to offer. But most of us, well, we're grown up, or we're even more grown up now. We're still seeing those games released. A lot of them are HD remakes. Then there's some new properties that are coming out too. Look at the Back to the Future games, for example. Heck, we've even got new Sam and Max games. It all kind of fits into the same sort of grouping, those adventure games, the fun, funny adventure games. And as we see those titles, either released brand new or released as HD remakes on the PCs and on the consoles, well, they're also taking the player base into account. They know that most of us have grown up. They know that a lot of us don't have the time to sit down and play these games right in front of a computer at all times of the day, which is why we're seeing these games also release on iPads and iPhones and other mobile devices. Because chances are pretty good that a lot of us have those. So they've got a market there. Same player base. New market. Now the nostalgia value, plus the pretty new graphics, there's a chance to attract some new players, but they're really targeting the old player base. There's going to be very little growth potential here. And that industry of adventure games, well, if they keep going the path they're going, they're never going to be as big as they used to be, because, well, they're really kind of falling behind as far as pulling in brand new players. I'm not saying they're unsuccessful, by no means. If you've played any one of these remakes, or if you've sat through and played some of the new Sam and Max games, they're fun. But they're not the next Halo. They're not the next Call of Duty. They don't churn out those kinds of numbers. And until they do something disruptive with their formula, they probably won't be able to attract that same player base, the popular player base. But they have their niche, and they know that we love them. And so they've made a choice to go ahead and tailor their product to us, their established player base. Then there's also a classic example of how you can really mismanage your player base in a very big way. Look at 3D Realms. If you're really old, you probably know them as Apogee Software. Gosh, when I say really old, I mean that you're older than like 25. Because if you're not, you probably don't remember them as Apogee Software. So, 3D Realms, this is a company who had a really strong player base in the early 90s. They had a really strong player base because the buzz around their games was huge. I mean, the games that they were involved in, not necessarily developing, but either they published, produced, or sometimes developed, they were involved very closely with Duke Nukem, Commander Keen, Wolfenstein 3D. Heck, you know, even into the 2000s, they kept a lot of us on with Max Payne. And, well, Prey. Prey was a fantastic game. It was even a commercial success, although I don't think it was ever as big as they wanted it to be. The problem that 3D Realms has had is, if you look back, and this isn't entirely atypical, the list of their canceled games is just as long as their list of completed games. And really, over the last 12 years, 15 years, 3D Realms has done a really bad job of connecting with its player base. It's done a really bad job of managing its community. And as a result, because there's very little involvement, a lot of us have gone elsewhere. A lot of us have kind of forgotten the 3D Realms name and what it used to mean, what it used to be prestigious for. A lot of us are still going to be connecting 3D Realms with Duke Nukem, but you think about that group of gamers, the group who didn't play through the early 90s PC video game craze. Well, they're going to be associating Duke Nukem with Gearbox and Take-Two. The problem was is that through 2000 to present, 3D Realms put out some good games with really no interaction to their player base. They knew that their players wanted and demanded good games, and they provided those good games, but they missed that something extra. They missed the multiplayer offering. It's actually one of the big downsides to Prey, is that its multiplayer was considered pretty weak. And I think you'd struggle to find a whole lot of people playing Prey multiplayer these days. There was no multiplayer in the Max Payne games. They definitely didn't do any favors to themselves, and this may not have been their direct decision, but they didn't do a whole lot of favors for themselves or Remedy either when it came to putting out that Max Payne movie. It's probably free on Netflix right now, but even then, I'm not sure if I can recommend it. All of this really kind of came around. They lost their player base to other reputable studios in that action, first-person, third-person shooter genre. They lost their customers to Valve. They lost their customers to Electronic Arts. They lost their customers to Microsoft. All because they didn't manage their player base beyond putting out a product, giving us something to buy. And, well, if you look at their track record, they weren't really even that great at that. Prey was completed by another studio. We all know the controversy over over Duke Nukem. It's not even in their hands anymore. If you want to really contrast them, not only their model, but how they manage their community, take a good look at one of my favorites these days, League of Legends by Riot Games. Now, League of Legends really has just about everything not in common with 3D Realms. They kind of pick and choose from these other groups that I've talked about. They have the enormous subscriber base of World of Warcraft. I don't know what their official numbers are. Maybe it's not 11.5 million, but when your game is good, multiplayer, online, available in multiple languages and regions, and free, you tend to attract a whole lot of players. But they're not a subscription. They make their money through microtransactions. And in that way, they're actually a little bit closer to Counter-Strike, just because the community is going to be a little bit more frugal. Now, there's going to be a lot of them out there that are spending a whole lot more. People like myself that really don't mind dropping $30, $40 on this game from time to time, because it does a good job of keeping me interested. Now, League of Legends has been very, very active in their community, very active with their player base, and they tailor a lot of themselves to that player base. They're very in touch. Once you start to pay attention, you realize that they're very in touch with their player base. You can see it at the rate that they release content, and the kind of content that they release. Now, they still have the problem where if they make a major change, and it introduces a major bug, it's absolutely going to kill them. Because there's other alternatives out there, and us as gamers, we are very fickle. It's pretty easy for us to go and pick up a competitor of, like, Heroes of New Earth. Hell, we can even go play the Terabad version of Dota that they've got over on StarCraft 2. So they realize that major changes have to be tailored, they have to be tested, and they have to be ready to meet challenges. And for that reason, they're going to have very large groups of on-call developers. At least, probably compared to a lot of other free-to-plays. But when it comes to other content, they make sure that they target their player base really well. They release new skins, things for us to buy, things that we want to buy, and they're usually pretty intelligently targeted. They make sure that they hit that geek side, that they hit all of the stuff that we want to purchase. Look at their Easter offering. Easter was pretty funny for League of Legends. They got some money out of me. They put out a skin for a character named Teemo that dressed him up in a little bunny costume, changed his animation for walking to a hop that he did everywhere, and changed the gigantic toxic mushrooms that he dropped everywhere like landmines into Easter eggs. That's hilarious. And it shows that they're pretty in tune with what gamers find hilarious. It's something that maybe I can't quite communicate effectively without a picture, but for its established player base, that keeps people playing. That keeps them interested, and it gets them to open up their wallets. And it gets them to do it happily, with a smile on their face. There's no begrudgingly saying, oh, okay, well, here's $5 for your awesome skin that I'm going to use from now until the end of time, because it's incredible. They release content like that very aggressively. And they make sure to hit all the marks. They hit the steampunk crowd. They hit the goth crowd. They hit the crowd that makes fun of emos, and they make sure to hit the hipster crowd also. Although I'm not sure how hipster you are if you're playing League of Legends. Maybe you think you are. They hit the hardcore gamer, and they hit the casual gamer as well. They make sure that there's something there for everybody. And then they make sure to engage themselves. They're constantly playing their own game with average people, streaming their games online, using their Twitter accounts to actually speak with players, sometimes even give players a glimpse into their everyday lives. This is how you manage an online player base. And I would wager that the community management group over at Riot Games is pretty extensive. And they probably have a policy internal that not just people with the title CM, community manager, are community managers. They probably expect that anyone who's working on technical issues also be a sort of community manager, a brand ambassador. You can put that in quotes in the air. They understand the value of making sure that their employees are representing themselves very well to the player base, communicating very well to that player base. A lot of contrast there between them and 3D Realms. The model that League of Legends follows is pretty new, really, but it's also the future of online gaming, these microtransactions, as long as they can keep it up, that is. I'm not saying that all these other games are going to go away, and I'm not saying that the first-person shooter player base is going to be changing over to this this multiplayer online battle arena style of style of gameplay, or even the model that they use to release their games. But we're going to see more and more of it. We're going to see more games like Battlefield free to play. We're going to see more services like Call of Duty's premium service for their upcoming games. We're going to see more community involvement. And now that companies are really aware of what their player base means to them beyond just the financials, beyond just the money that they make from enticing us to spend, we're going to see more involvement on their part. And those that don't, well, they're going to suddenly have a whole lot in common with 3D Realms. Thank you for listening. This has been Eat Gamer, episode 11, for June 4th, 2011. My name is Jeff. Make sure you check out the Twitter feed. That's at Eat Gamer, all one word. You can also check out the website, www.eatgamer.com, and a brand new email address, since I finally got the mail server up and working. You can go ahead and send mail to Jeff at eatgamer.com. Tell your friends, tell your family, and while you do, enjoy that beautiful summer weather. On that note, let's go ahead and keep it sounding like summer. We'll go ahead and finish this one up with Quittin' Time by Patrick Lee. See you next time. Thank you.